Welcome to today's live webinar, How to Drive E-Commerce Sales, Average Order Values, and Conversions in 2013, hosted by Retail Online Integration and sponsored by Steelhouse. My name is Melissa Campanelli, and I'm Editor-in-Chief of Retail Online Integration, and I'm pleased to welcome you to today's event. Increasing sales, order values, and conversions is the holy grail for marketers. And while it's challenging now, it's likely to get even more challenging in this age of the hyper-connected customer. In this lively interactive webinar, web conversion guru Amy Africa and Mark Douglas, President and CEO of Steelhouse, will offer tips and best practices around increasing the e-commerce trifecta, including how to design on-site offers or messages that will not only attract customers but entice them to stay, why it's important for your ads and offers to be iOS device friendly, what segments are most effective when targeting your marketing campaigns, and so much more. Before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select questions at the end of the hour. You can send them in at any time, however. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can use all of the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. Speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all of the widgets on this console do and how you can customize your experience today. So with that, I'd like to introduce you to Mark Douglas, the CEO and President of Steelhouse. Take it away, Mark.
Hi. Good morning if you're on the West Coast, and good afternoon if you're on the East Coast. So I wanted to get started by talking a bit about what we call on-site offers. And there's obviously for the last 10, even 15 years, there's been a ton of attention on display advertising, search advertising, in all forms of marketing off your website. And what on-site offers is about marketing on your site while the consumer is still there in order to increase conversion rates. And so I'm going to first show you an example of what we refer to as an on-site offer. So this is a golf site, and what we've done is we've layered essentially additional content on top of the site that's directly geared towards that consumer, directly targeted at that consumer. In a lot of cases, it is completely interactive, like this particular offer. It's kind of the blue box that you see. It slides out. It provides video. It provides ways to engage with the brand, information. It provides social links and so forth. And these on-site offers, they're fairly new. It's something that we at Steelhouse introduced and the other companies are introducing. And they're very, very high engagement. And so I want to talk a bit about, I just want to kind of first show you what I mean by on-site offer. Then I want to kind of talk about kind of examples of how they use, and we can come back. So the first thing you'll find out about these is if your messaging to the consumer reinforces real world behavior, you get better results, often tremendously better results. And what I mean by real-world behavior is that if you look at the kind of marketing that's typically done, it's often just demographic, psychographic. Often there's no marketing on e-commerce sites and other retail sites. It's really just presenting the products, maybe with a call, you know, one call to action on the homepage. What we think of as real-world behavior, here's some examples, and these examples our customers have done. You know, targeting people who we have a customer who sells consumer electronics, and so they create an offer on their site targeted at people who were shopping for high-definition televisions worth $1,000 or more in the 7 days before the Super Bowl, and then they did an offer after the Super Bowl for those people who didn't purchase. Because once someone's, especially a guy, once he wants to buy a TV, it kind of stuck in his head. And so that's kind of a real world behavior. People were shopping before, didn't purchase, shopping in specific categories. Then, you know, the event came. Now let's see if we can still get additional conversions. We've seen examples where, like a high-end fashion line, provided offers targeting kind of their most premium customers. So people, like in one example, people had spent $200 or more two or more times in the last quarter, or people spent $500 or more in the current season. And the offer they created was allowing those premium customers to see next season's fashion line, in case they sold shoes, to be able to buy next season's shoes, see and buy next season's shoes before their friends even know they exist. Really compelling offer to the best customers. And they made that offer on their site when those kind of very active, very premium shoppers came back to the site. So another example, kind of real-world behavior that they targeted. And there are lots of examples. We've seen companies where if you add $100 or more to your shopping cart and then go to a store locator page, if it's both an online and brick-and-mortar retailer, they offer a buy-now discount if you buy now, because you don't know if that consumer's they check the store locator page, so during buying intent, but you don't know for sure they're going to actually get in their car and drive to the store. So one way you can kind of leverage kind of on-site offers and marketing to the consumer while they're shopping is to basically, you know, make offers to that consumer that model everyday behavior on your site, and kind of real behavior on your site that's beyond just hitting the homepage, just kind of browsing products that model kind of real-world examples of what people are doing. The other thing you can do is, and it's a really good example, this is actually really simple, is you can reinforce ad campaigns that are running off the site. Those ad campaigns can be straight display that get new visitors, or those ad campaigns can be retargeted campaigns. But what we've seen is the landing pages always improve the performance of ad campaigns. I mean, when the person clicks an ad or even goes to your site without clicking, and they see content that is in sync with the ad campaign they see, you tend to get higher engagement, higher conversion rates. But landing pages are really time consuming to create, require, you know, kind of working with other teams in your company. With an on-site offer, an offer that layers on top of the site while the person's shopping, it's a way to provide landing pages keyed against every offer without putting in all the effort to actually create the page. So rather than having to create full pages and have them tested and all that kind of stuff, you can just create an on-site offer that layers on top of the site and appears when someone who clicked on that campaign, you know, goes even just to the homepage, or someone who didn't even click and just goes to the site, gets to the site. And the performance you tend to get on all these examples I'm giving are pretty significant. We see on-site offers that we run for our customers typically have a click rate that averages 6% on your site, and a click-to-conversion rate that averages 15%. It can often get much, much higher. So there are lots of different ways you can use this. You can use this to offer discounts. You can use this to offer message, you know, just to kind of message the consumer. And here are some examples of what we've seen, and, you know, new product announcements. If someone was on your site they went to a page when a product was out of stock, if they come back to the site a day later, then tell them it's now back in stock. That'll definitely generate more sales. Reduce cart abandonment by, you know, possibly doing upsell offers. So if someone adds $50 or more to their shopping cart and then they don't check out after they've added a few items, you might tell them that you offer free shipping, you know, with purchases of $70 or more or something to that effect. And in that case, it not only can reduce cart abandonment for those consumers, it also would increase average order value. Loyalty offers I mentioned in terms of, you know, that loyalty offer I mentioned involved earlier, where so the shoppers were able to preview next season's fashion line. There was no discount involved. It was full price. You just got to buy it before your friends do. And it rewarded loyal shoppers without in any way affecting margins. You can do with on-site offers, because they so easily layer on a site and they're easy to create, you can do private sales, you can do flash sales on your site, reinforce email campaigns, drive social sign-ups. Essentially, when those on-site offers are presented to shoppers based on their behavior, and they kind of reinforce their brand but a bit stand out from the rest of the site, they have a strong tendency to drive whatever action you want. And we see, I mentioned earlier, the click rates average 6%, but we see click rates that are double digit regularly, and sometimes substantially more than double digit. So in terms of how to use these to engage with your shopper, the things we found is you want the on-site offer, one, to have to reinforce your brand. So you want it to look like your site, look like something that was created on your site, but it's layered on top. You want it to drive one or more actions that you're looking for. I mean, some of these are just really clear for anything you do, clear call to action. Visuals are really important because it's eye-catching, but clear text as to what's being offered or what's being stated is really important also. Our customers often incorporate product carousels in the offers. Even though the offer is on your site and they can already browse products on your site, it's a way to maybe highlight products and categories that they've visited more than a few times, or where you have something on sale or some new product that you think they would be interested in. We see it used for social sign-ups, so there's often ways to like whatever the offer is so they can share it with their friends. And the other thing we do is we tend to put into these a lot of animation and often a lot of video. I mean, you look at static advertising, a lot of the advertising on the web or even a lot of content on your own site is often static images and things like that, but we're living in a world with a lot of immersive media. You know, you go to a page, it's static images, but it's surrounded by social media, it's surrounded by video and things like that. To the extent you incorporate that into your offers, you're going to get higher engagement. You're going to get more, the consumer's going to notice it more, they're going to engage with it more. The benefits of this, and I want to reiterate just to make it really clear what I'm talking about. It's real simple. Market to your consumers on your own website. If all the marketing is off the site just to get them there, continue that marketing when they get there. And an easy way to do that is through on-site offers, is by providing a marketing layer on top of all the product content that's below it. The benefits are really simple. Drive higher conversion. Basically, everything goes up. You can drive higher engagement, higher click-through rates, higher average order values to upsell offers, and ultimately higher conversion rates. And the percentage we're talking about are really significant. I mean, they're so significant, I often don't want to quote specific numbers, but any time we see someone running on-site offers, we see, like I said, 6% or higher click rates. We tend to see conversion lift that is significant, double-digit conversion lift for those consumers. We usually see significant lift in the average order values. So it's something that's very easy to do. It basically is continuing the marketing dialogue with the consumer in a very easy way on the site, and it's going to drive ultimately higher sales for your brand and for your products. And so that's a really high level. There's a lot of content about on-site offers and how they connect to retargeting and other things also on our website, steelhouse.com. I'm going to hand this back to the moderator to kind of I was providing an introduction to kind of provide more information, you know, in terms of best practices and so forth. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. This is Melissa Campanelli again, the Editor-in-Chief of Retail Online Integration. And thanks a lot for that presentation about on-site offers. Now we're going to move on to the next part of our presentation, which is going to be handled by Amy Africa. And her presentation is titled Power Selling, How to Drive E-commerce Sales, Average Order Values, and Conversion in 2013. So take it away, Amy.
Hi. Thanks, Melissa. Thanks for listening in. So today I'm going to give you some tried and true tips for optimizing your e-commerce website. I'm going to specifically talk about navigation, text search, how to develop a focused selling system, including sort of the perfect checkout and lead forms. I'm going to give you some good techniques for building content that increases your conversion and a couple tips for things you can do on the back end. And then I'll wrap it up with a few sort of short mobile tips. These are big bang for the buck things that you can do without breaking the bank, and anybody can do them. So these are really simple things that you can do. So the first thing I want to talk about is navigation. If you've heard me speak before and looking at the attendees list, most of you have, you know that I typically open with comments on navigation. And I do this because getting it right is the absolute most important thing that you can do on your website. Out of every 100 websites I look at, I feel that about 2 of them have user-centered navigation. And as we sort of move on into a mobile, handheld, smartphone world, navigation becomes increasingly important. It has a tremendous impact on your success, and it's definitely the thing that most marketers pay the least attention to. Navigation is a self-fulfilling prophecy, so you get what I give you. If the user doesn't see it and they don't see it on the first view of the screen that they're looking at, it doesn't exist to them. My experience is in usability, so we watch how people shop online. We give them a bunch of money to spend, and then we track their eyes. We look at their pupil dilation. We look at their blink rate. We record their temperature. We look at their nonverbals. We test their spit. We do all sorts of other things. And I can tell you that navigation is indicative of your success. Users tend to like a lot of navigation. We don't like it because it looks messy or cluttered, but users tend to favor sites with clear directions on what they're supposed to do next. So navigation is the thing that will help your users get around, and it's all of the things that help your users get around. No user in any usability session that I've ever conducted has mentioned navigation, the word navigation. Even marketers don't mention it. They talk about getting around and finding things. So things that help them are top bars, left-hand bars, problem solution drop-downs, bestsellers list, breadcrumbs, recently viewed items, all of those type of things like that. Those are all of the things that are important to the user. There's a much bigger chance that you're going to offer too little navigation than you're going to offer too much. Now, I showed you an extreme example, but it is an example of something that works. So we're going to see a lot of things that sort of are uglier than a dog's breakfast today, but they have high conversion for their sites, and they have sort of high adoption to cart, which is actually more important. You're also going to want to pay attention to the word connect. So this is also a pretty underestimated thing. When someone goes to Google and types in T-shirts and they click on a PPC ad or a link to get to your site, they want to see T-shirts, not apparel, not casual clothing, not activewear, but T-shirts. If you can't show the word T-shirts in your navigation or whatever it is that's appropriate, you should show it in the center column of the landing page so the user knows where they are. And it should be the word that the user has used to search. So that word connect really takes the brain out of the equation. Our decisions about purchasing products are made in the reptilian brain, and the reptilian brain is incapable of processing language. So it's very difficult for the reptilian brain to understand anything but visuals. And so you want to look, when you're transferring to the neocortex, the thinking brain, and you're making people think a little bit about what it is that you're doing, you want to make sure that it's super easy for them. You want to look at separating the direct and no refer traffic from the rest of your traffic. And this is really important because people who know you often have very different navigational needs than people who don't. But I also want to talk about text search. If the user can't see, if the things the user can see are inadequate, they resort to text search. So unless you're a sophisticated user or, frankly, an e-commerce marketer, you're going to try other avenues first before you try the text search. Text search is the hardest thing to get right. It's just even Google has a difficult time getting it right. So a lot of the text search best practices are put out by the companies who develop the search programs. And this is sort of a terrible thing because it biases the information that's out there. So, for example, a lot of the search companies tell you to put your search box in the upper right-hand corner of your site. And they do this because it's the number one hotspot on your site, and they know if you put it there, they're going to get a boatload of searches, and way more than if you put it sort of on the left hand. And since most of them charge by the search, they make more money by telling you to put it in the top right. However, that's not what's best for the user. What's the best place for the user in terms of text search is the center column. And it's the right place because after we look at the second page on any site, we primarily look down the middle column. We look to the left when we need help, and we look to the right when we're about to leave. We look down the center when things are okay. So when someone comes to your site, they're going to scan the entry page that they landed on, and then from then on, they're going to look mostly down the middle column, which is why top navigation is so imperative. It's also really important to note that the size of the search box makes a big difference in the success of the search. So the bigger the box, the better. When a user is faced with a smaller search, they try to fit what they want to search for in a little box. So this results in them sort of choosing really broad categories, which gets them a boatload of searches that they don't want. They truncate words, they misspell stuff, they abbreviate stuff that's not applicable. So the bigger the box, the better. If you give them enough room to search, they type in better quality searches, and they usually get better quality finds. And as I said before, users don't want to search for anything on your site. They want to find stuff, and there really is a big difference in that mentality. If you have a lot of categories on your users aren't great at searching, you should consider a split. And it's sort of hard to see on this screen, but the split is the thing at in the Amazon example and before the search box that allows you to search by department. So a split can allow you to search by department or category or whatever it is that you choose before the user enters into the search, their search into the text string. About a quarter of the people use it, but it's often worth it because the people who tend to use it tend to be the worst searchers or the weakest searchers. The other thing that you want to do is you want to look at simplifying your results. So the presentation of the results is more important than the results themselves, and I can't emphasize this enough. We know from usability that the user sees the top six results, but the majority of their focus is spent on the first two. So you should bet your house on the first result. If I go in and I search for balloons, and on Party City, the first balloon should be the best-selling balloon that I would bet my house on to sell. Now, you can see they have a new balloon. I'm not a big fan of the strategy, which is why I'm showing this example. But you want to look at, you know, the first thing you're going to bet your house on, the second thing you're going to bet your car on, the third thing you're going to bet whatever's, you know, your dog on. Maybe that's the first thing. But whatever's third most important to you, it's very important that you prioritize these, because they're going to be the ones that get 84% or more of the user's attention. So you can put stuff in there that doesn't sell, and you will get more sales. It's definitely a formula that you can use, but it's not going to be the best formula to get the users to adopt stuff to basket. And adoption to basket is more important than almost anything else you can do, because you can, if someone adopts to basket, you can convert them in other ways. You're also going to want to use your refinements pretty strategically. Refinements are the things like bestseller, new, price high to low. You don't want to have more than 8 of them, and you preferably want to have maybe 5. You should limit your facets and the number of choices. Facets are on the left-hand side, and there's a myth that the more facets you offer, the better. And that's totally a myth. You shouldn't offer a ton of facets. You should keep the facets tight with really meaningful choices. And the last thing you sort of want to do for search is you want to offer generic recommendations for no finds. So if someone types in bananas on your site and you don't have any bananas, you want to showcase 9 items. It used to be 6. Now it's about 9 items that everybody on your list is going to buy. That's pretty important. So what else? The next thing to talk about would be a focus system. So selling is way more of a science than an art. It shouldn't be anecdotal. It should be completely statistical. You should use your analytics to determine what it is that you should sell. There are a couple of people on this site that are in lead generation. So I'm using this example not because I want to promote my blog that I barely write on, but it's a good example of being obnoxious, not just the pink collar. But as you know, we ask for the inquiry over and over and over and over in all sorts of different ways. The more you ask for the order or inquiry, the greater the chance you're going to get it. If you're in e-commerce, you want to have a perpetual cart in the top right-hand column, in the right-hand side column, and at the bottom. You want to constantly show people that they're in a place that they should put a cart and that they should put stuff in their cart, and then they should subsequently check out. If you want orders, you want to have it at least 2 places, the top and the bottom, but preferably 3 to 4, as I mentioned. If you want inquiries, you want to ask them several different ways. You can't just say, hey, sign up for our newsletter and get free stuff, because it's not appropriate for everyone. You have to give them alternatives. So for me, it might be you could sign up for a webinar, you could sign up for a podcast, you can ask me a question, you can sign up for our newsletter, you can sign up for tips, there's all sorts of different ways you can ask someone in the audience something. There's all sorts of different ways that you can get that email address or the text number if you focus on what's important to the user. The other thing is that you want to have a logical process. So you want to look at what it is that's important to the user and what is that's important to you. When a user first comes to your site, and especially if you're in e-commerce, the thing that you want to know first is, do I have their email address and can I market to them if they screw up? Because there's a much bigger chance that they're going to screw up than they're going to succeed. If you look at your analytics, you're going to see that. So you want to look at how you can collect their email address. If you have their email address, don't offer them the email box because it's a waste of their time. But if you don't have their email address, look at pop-ups for collecting email addresses. Look at how you're going to capture mobile numbers. Even if you never send a text message in your life, you want to look at it for profiling and for carrying your cart. Look at surveys, look at user reviews, look at polls, look at Ask the Experts, look at all sorts of things that give the user a step to get them in the right direction. It's very important that you have a logical process for them because it's very likely, as I said, that they're not going to come in and want to purchase the first time. The next example is from Target, old version of Target's mobile site, and I get this question a lot about action directives. Action directives are their buttons that tell people what they're supposed to do, mostly add to cart or buy now or download this now or whatever is appropriate for your site. A lot of people talk about color testing action directives. If you want to color test, test against orange, and that's probably going to win, or an orangey version of red. But in general, the color tests, I think, are sort of meaningless in the big scheme of things. The big scheme of things with directives is to have big action directives, you know, put the size that you think is appropriate and then triple it, and that's probably what's good for the user. The bigger, the better, and the more, the merrier. You want to make sure that on every screen, every view that the user sees, there's an action directive. So one of the things that's important is that we design things as web pages, and we say, well, this is our page, but users only look at stuff one screen at a time, and they consider every screen to be a page. So you want to make sure that you're asking for them on every page for the order. And then the completion of the order, if you're in e-commerce, which would be an ability to see some sort of persisting or perpetual cart. You want to look at deadlines. Deadlines create urgency, and they cause people to focus. A lot of people who are on our catalog or offline marketers tend to use their catalog or offline deadlines, their print deadlines on the web, which is, in most cases, pretty ineffective. Web deadlines tend to work best if they're no more than 5 days. Usually they tend to work best if they're anywhere from, you know, 24 hours to 3 days. So shorter deadlines is better, and rolling deadlines. as I said, deadlines do create urgency and they cause people to focus, but they also trigger their reptilian brain to make a decision to say, do I want this or not? Do I need this now or not? Am I going to miss out on something if I don't get it immediately or not? Because we most humans have present bias, 96% of us have present bias, it's important to really force that issue. You want to look at some of the things like checkout. So, you know, the things that are important to check out, I can tell you right now, when someone hits proceed to check out, their blood pressure increases, their body temperature increases, their pulse increases, their blink rate might change, their pupils might constrict, they're going to have some sort of physical reaction in their body. Even if you buy something online every day, every five times a day, you're still going to have something, a physical reaction in your body. So you want to make it, you want to make your checkouts and your lead forms on the base version customized for the user. The things that users like the most are it to be fast, which seems really common, but we still are not very good at it. Most of us have performance hits in our search and checkout, and those are the two places that users hate them the most and don't respond to them. You want to look at carts that never expire. So if I come and I put something in my basket and I come again tomorrow, that item should still be in my basket. If it's no longer available because you have inventory problems, then show them that message and offer them an alternative product. Make sure that they know that you're constantly trying to get their order. You want to look at guest checkouts. If you don't have a guest checkout, you should have one. You get about 30% of the people on a guest checkout, and it's not people who haven't been with you before. A lot of times guest checkouts are used by registered users, but they want to use the guest checkout because they perceive it's faster. Other things that are important, no irrelevant questions, super important. If you don't need it to ship them the order, then don't ask it. Ask it on a survey, ask it on a confirmation page, ask it via telemarketing. I don't care where you ask for it, but don't ask for it in the mix. Get all of the irrelevant questions out. Have very clear action directives. Tell them what they're supposed to do next on many views, many different places, so they're really clear that you want their order. And then look at temperature bars so that the user knows where they are in the process. Things that users need are different than what they want. So they want what they need. They need things like perpetual carts to remind them that they have stuff in their basket. They need aggressive flow. They need those security and privacy guarantee type plugs. They definitely need limited navigation. So for those of you, there are a couple of you on this attendees list who have full navigation in your checkout, you're just giving people a reason to leave. You want to have very limited navigation in your checkout. And then you want to look at alternative ways to order. We're still getting, even on the best sites, 25 to 30% of the people to come in and order, place their order over the phone. So they hit the checkout and they say, hey, I don't want to place my order in the checkout. I want to call. So, you know, give them the phone number, give them the alternate ways to order, all sorts of different things that you can do. Chat, instigated chat, fax numbers, you know, you can do click to call, you can do VChat, anything that's going to work. And then customized checkouts. There's a lot of stuff in the industry right now that one-page checkouts are the best thing you can do. They're great for people who've been there before and are great at checking out. No doubt about that. They suck for people who are inexperienced at checking out, that are not familiar with webs, that are not sophisticated user. So the best thing that you can do from an e-commerce perspective is to offer a one-page, a multi-step, and then a one-click type checkout, and you sense what the user needs and you offer it to them so that they get the checkout that they have the highest propensity to follow through on. Lead forms are the same way. So things that users like on lead forms, they like them to be fast. They like them to be really pre-filled, to not have many questions, no irrelevant questions, just like the checkout. Vertical fields works best. So city, state, and zip should be on three lines, not on one. You want to make sure that you have those big action directives, and you want to make sure that you present your information in the logical order. On your checkout and in your lead forms, capture email first so that if they abandon, you still can send them an email. Make sure that you do server calls at the end of any email capture field so that you can collect that email and actually use it, even if they don't follow through on the whole form. And then definitely no captions. things that they like, that they need, temperature bars, if there's more than one page, a benefits reminder, why do I want this again, telling them what it, why it's a good idea that they're signing up and so that they don't want to miss out. We like to know that we're not going to, you know, for users, the sort of the fear of loss is definitely greater than the possibility of gain. So we want to make sure that we don't miss out on something. Alternate contact information and the security information if it's appropriate. You want to look at working your repeats. So repeat users should account for a significant portion of your traffic, and you want to make sure that you're really aggressive with them. So on a great site, you're going to see about 40 to 60% repeats on an average e-commerce site. So how do you handle the repeats? You want to personalize the page. Welcome back, Amy, does make a difference, and it makes way more of a difference than you think. But what makes even more of a difference is to show me products that I've actually looked at on that page, to show them to me in a carousel, to show them to me in a first view or on the right-hand side banners. You want to look at keeping your cookies open so that you don't ask them questions that they've already answered. If they've given you their email address or they've come in from an email, you shouldn't ask them an email, you know, the email question again. You want to use your bops, which I'll talk about in a little bit. So you really want to work your repeats. You also want to look at, you know, targeting your market. So every company has a unique hierarchy, and you need to figure out yours. So one of the things that I get, the question I get most sort of in the fall and the holiday season is, who's the most valuable and how do I segment it? And I look at people who have abandoned their carts and lead forms first, because those are the easiest people to capture. If you have a good abandoned cart program, not just one email, but a program, 5 to 7 emails, without an offer, you're going to capture 15 to 20%, and with an offer, you're going to capture 30 to 40%. Add in telemarketing, you could capture 60% of those people who are abandoning your carts or leads. So you can be massively aggressive. Then I look at abandoned adopters and starters, people who add something to their basket but then don't hit to go to the next, to go to checkout. Those people are incredibly viable. So if someone comes in from an email and you have their email address and they put something in their basket and then they leave, it's fair game to remarket to them. I also look at abandoned searches. I look at people who sign up for our emails or have given us a mobile text number or both. I look at the repeat visitors, and then I look at people who have long average active user sessions, people who stayed on your site for a long period of time. So if your average user session is 7 minutes and you see people who've stayed there 12 or 15, those are good, highly targeted people. So those are some of the good places to start. There's many others, and every person should have a hierarchy from the top of the pyramid to the bottom of what it is that you want to attack. So content, you know, we spend a lot of time, you know, working on the 90% of the things that don't matter, and we really need to work on the 10% that does. So, you know, from an e-commerce perspective and sort of a service perspective, there are very few things that actually matter to a user. We're very, very visual online. Depending on your theory of evolution, you know, the brain has been around for 450 million years. In various states of existence. Written words have been around for about 10,000, or excuse me, written words have been around for about 10,000, and spoken words have been around for about 40,000. But visuals have been around for 450 million as soon as the brain could process information. So it's really important that you have visuals, you have good visuals, and you have multiple visuals. So if you only have one visual per product page, I would highly look at taking your top 10 products and beefing them up and see what it does for you. Looking at pictures of people, it's one of the things that most companies don't do, and it's one of the things that users really appreciate, and you'll see it in your increased user session. Look at your average customer, pictures of your average customer, or who they aspire to be, you know, what type of person they aspire to be. Those are the type pictures, not the picture of the CEO or the marketing director or your friendly customer service person, you know, but people who look like the person who's buying. You want to, from a content perspective, there's only a few things that you want to capture from a user perspective. From an SEO perspective, totally different roles. But you want to look at your headlines and your subheads. Users look at the headline, they look at the subhead, they look at the caption, they look at bullets, and they look at buttons. They don't really look at anything else. So those are, and they, when they look at the headline, they look at the price, and they also look at the DNA, the deliverability and the availability. So when are they going to get it? The delivery and availability. How fast are they going to get it, and how fast can you get it to them? Price, headlines, and the in-stock messaging, as well as the pictures on the caption photos and the photos themselves, can sell a product way better than the bullets, believe it or not. So from a user perspective, that's what's the most important. Other things that are sort of incredibly useful for conversion, you don't have to have them, but they will make a difference. One is video. Now, people just put, you know, go online and they say, okay, well, we're going to add video to 500 products, and then they put a bunch of garbage video on their site. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a video that's written like a little infomercial that has very strong call to actions, very strong action directives that tell the user what the product is, how they can buy it, when they can get it, and then clearly ask them for an order. So, you know, videos from an e-commerce perspective and a service perspective, they don't have to be perfect. You have to be very aggressive with the action directives. You can, if you can't do videos yourself, you can solicit them from users on Facebook. It's a great way to get it. Just make sure you get an appropriation sign off. But use a user video and then donate it. It works incredibly well. And you want to keep your SEO strategy in mind when you're using videos. So make sure that they have the appropriate keywords and all of that, especially if you're selling to the younger generation who's now using, you know, YouTube as their television. And when you're looking at videos, it's very important not to just do 100 videos and dump them on your site, but to develop like 5 or 10, then figure out the perfect formula, figure out where you're getting the most conversion, what the style is, and then implement that type of video. If your videos are not good, they will decrease your conversion, and oftentimes it's a substantial amount. So you really want to do some video testing, not just add them sort of ad hoc. The next thing I want to talk about is evidence. So, you know, people go online for three reasons. They go online for speed. They go online for self-service. You know, we think it's fast. We think it's better. We can do it better ourselves than someone else can do it. And then we go online to look for other people who are just like us, even in B2B. So things from an evidence perspective are, you know, reviews. And with reviews, it's not just, you can't just get Power Reviews or Bizarre Voice and dump it on your site. I mean, you can, but that's not the best. You want to prioritize the reviews. So the best review and like a middle type review are first, and the user sees those. So it's because your users are not going to read 293 reviews or however many you have. They're going to read a couple, and then they're going to say, yeah, this guy sounds like me. I'm going to buy this product, or this person's an idiot. I can use it better. I can figure it out. I'm definitely going to buy it. Or they say, well, this does sound like not the right product for me. So when you're using reviews, definitely weight them. Other things that sort of are important from evidence are bestseller lists, polls, surveys, tips from other people, very important, testimonials, case studies, pictures of people who, as I said, look like the user. All of that kind of stuff goes into evidence. I talked a little bit about site personalization earlier. When you're personalizing your site, and everybody should be personalizing their site at this point. So personalization seems massively overwhelming if you look at it like, oh, I just want to be like Amazon. So what you want to do is you want to say, okay, I'm going to start with a first page, and then I'm going to look at recently viewed items. I'm going to show my users a box of what they viewed before. I'm going to look at cross-sells and upsells. Customers who bought this also bought that, and make it realistic, not just some formulaic thing. Really important to you know, sort of streamline that. Okay. I'm going to follow up. I'm going to finish up with working the back end and then a couple mobile tips. So the back end is where the money is made, unequivocally where the money is made. So I'm going to tell you the things that I think really work and that I know from experience really work. I don't personally like any of them, but what I like doesn't usually work online. So when I recommend the tips that I'm recommending, like topic using pops on exit, I'm not saying I personally like pop-ups. I'm saying I know for a fact they work. They're massively effective to collect email addresses on entrance, and they're very effective on exit because the user's leaving anyway, so really who cares if you piss them off? I mean, that's part of the true story. So you want to look at, you know, do they work? They totally work for the same reason we hate them. They're pattern interrupters. We have to assess our safety. Our reptilian brain says, what's that pop-up? And it has to say, am I safe? Do I know it? And they have to interact with it. That's why we hate it, because we don't like to have pattern interrupters. That's why if you're in a meeting and someone's cell phone vibrates, you have to figure out whose it is. You have to assess your safety. It's just human nature. So pop-ups, aggressive pop-ups on exit to collect an email address if you don't have it, very, very, very good thing to do. Pop-ups are completely dependent on creative. So if you tell me your pop-up doesn't work, it's because your creative stinks. There's really no other reason that I've seen doing this for a really long time. I'm a big fan of card hoppers on entrance. So the purpose of a card hopper is to recognize the user and skip the steps that they wouldn't find or be good at. So you see on Bud K, which is one of my all-time favorite sites, on the bottom they have a card hopper. Welcomes you back. It can welcome you back and says, you have an item in your cart. Do you want to go directly to your cart? These work really well, totally dependent on creative as well. Trigger emails for follow-up. So triggers for follow-up, incredibly important. Triggers are a series. So if you just say, I have an abandoned cart email, you don't have a follow-up program. You have one email. That doesn't really count. You want to look at having a plan that works the user through an appeal process that on every email tells the user what they're supposed to do and how they're supposed to do it. One of the biggest things I see with the problems I see with abandoned cart emails right now is we send them right back to the place that they had a problem in the first place. So we say, you've abandoned your cart, please go back to the same place that you had problems with. You want to give them, you know, alternatives to inquiring or ordering online and make it easier for them. There's no shame in getting people on the phone, which is what most people who actually are better at. Look at personalizing the emails. Look at, you know, reminding the user what they abandoned, putting the images in the email, using the deadlines, pushing them up against the deadline. Look at the timing. You should have a mobile program for mobile abandons. The mobile abandon program should be different than your regular follow-up program. And really, you know, really work this program. I gave you the stats of you know, sort of how they'll do or how they'll do with or without an offer. Those are best practices. I see a lot of people do better than the numbers I mentioned. You just have to really work it. Live and instigated chat. Live and instigated. I used to be a huge person. I mean, I really hated chat. It was one of the things that I thought was massively ineffective. I've changed my mind in the last 30 months, especially with instigated chat. Instigated chat is going to convert the best. I recommend you start with it, and then you perfect it, excuse me, and then you move on. So instigated chat, you start the conversation with a user when you see where they're struggling. So you start the conversation when they're in the search function or when they're in the checkout or when they're on the homepage and you think they're going to bounce. You look at how you're going to save the user. The last thing, which I'm not covering, is any of the remarketing retargeting efforts, because we covered that at the beginning, but also I'm really, Steelhouse is amazing at that. So I don't get paid for this webinar. I don't get paid to recommend Steelhouse. I really love them as a vendor, and I have many clients who use them, and their model really works. So I highly encourage you. This is not a paid advertisement. This is an Amy Africa endorsement. If you have problems with them, you can call me up and scream at me, and I'll figure out something to do for you. But the reality is that stuff like that makes a big difference for you. Retargeting, remarketing, especially on your own site, huge. That was a great point earlier on. Huge thing that you can do. Okay, so retargeting should be a slide in that, but since it was covered before, I sort of skipped that. I'm going to jump into mobile, and then we'll take some questions. Mobile is way easier than people think. Everyone and their brother talks about mobile these days, and from what I've seen, most of the information is completely incorrect. Consultants overcomplicate it to make money, and they want to overcomplicate it so they can make a lot of money, but mobile is really simple. It's probably the easiest thing we've done since the Internet started. And it's simple because it's mostly like the web was in the mid-90s when I was starting out. So the things that make a difference in mobile, there's just a couple things. The first one is speed. The highest converting pages are 50 to 100K. The average mobile page right now is 350K. If you do nothing else but reduce the size of your pages and make them faster, you're going to improve your adoption of cart and then your conversion. Unequivocally, speed makes a difference. Boring topic, I know, but it makes a difference. Navigation. Navigation, in a traditional desktop world, navigation accounts for 40 to 60% of your success. I say about 60 on some sites. It's a little less, which is why there's 40 to 60% range. In the mobile world, it's about 85 to 90%. If they can't see it on the 2x4 screen, it doesn't exist. If you want a good mobile site, you need to make sure your action directives are big and in your face. You need to look at your forms and checkout, make sure that they're thumb-sized and well-spaced. Look at eBay for a great example, that there aren't any irrelevant questions or elements, and make sure that the users know where they are in the process. And then the last thing that's important in mobile is something that nobody talks about, which is working the transfer. And the transfer looks at how many people start on your mobile site and then finish elsewhere, like your desktop site. So it's critical because the abandonment rate is so much higher in mobile. In a traditional world, you're going to get 60 to 70% abandonment rates. In a mobile world, you're going to get about 92%. If you don't get a 90% abandonment rate, on mobile, it's very likely that you're not getting enough people to adopt a cart, which is way more of an issue in mobile than even abandoned. So mobile transfer works like regular transfer. It has more elements, so it's more complicated to measure, but that's pretty much it. You segregate your stuff into buckets, so smartphones, feature phones, tablets, desktop site, live chat, instigated chat, email, video chat, et cetera. My recommendation is to break it down into what you can manage, not what you can dream about. And then you work the transfer. So the first thing you do is mimic your cart. So if someone puts something in their mobile basket, then that same item is reflected in their regular basket. There are a lot of technical ways that you can do that. On the carts where the user isn't logged in or you can't automatically duplicate the cart, you can use mobile text numbers and email addresses to carry the cart for you. That's why on mobile it's often more successful to collect an email address and the mobile number than to get an order because you get the carry, and the carry is what's going to get you long-term business. You also want to make sure that I said on the trigger section, you want to make sure you have an abandoned cart email program for mobile users. The messaging should be different. The timing should be different. You should push harder to get people on the phone or in chat to place the order. Part of working the transfer is knowing where the user converts from best. So right now, the easiest and typically most successful thing you can do to get the user on the phone is to get the user on the phone or in chat. You know, that's less likely with tablets, which is why you need to put tablets in a separate bucket. But with phones, click to call or click to chat eliminates the need for any sort of back-end program. They're on the phone, you get them to push the button, they get to call you, they get the order or the inquiry, and then that's it. If you don't ask for it, though, or you don't show them the number, or you don't show them that click-to-call button, you're not going to get it. So the cool thing is that if, and nobody tells you about this, about working the transfer, but if you work the transfer, your combined conversion is going to be higher than your traditional desktop site. So you can convert about 20% of people without an offer using aggressive methods for traditional desktop abandoners. But with mobile, you get about 45% of the people to convert. So if you work them, it's not going to be this way forever. So, you know, right now it's twice as easy. It's definitely not going to be that way forever. So you definitely have to look at working that as fast as possible and developing a system. And if your system's not perfect and it's 60%, it's way better than zero. So implement it. People have higher propensity to buy in mobile right now, especially on tablets, which is why tablets is 2 to 3 times the conversion of your regular desktop site. So, and mobile people are also liking because a lot of times there's more payment options available to them for some reason. And that sort of concludes my portion of the seminar. I did give you my email address, so shoot me questions if we can't handle them in the next 10 minutes.
Great.
Yes, great. Thanks so much, Amy. Great information as usual. Tons of great helpful tips. So I encourage everybody to send some questions, because I'm sure you're probably your brains are exploding with information. So any questions you have, please send. We do have one right now, so I'm gonna take it. Amy, I guess there's an issue with one of our listeners who's web developer, insists on CAPTCHA on its lead form to keep out spam bots. What do you think about that? And then how could he get them to change their mind?
Well, in my experience, CAPTCHA loses about 60% of the inquiries. The CAPTCHA people tell you that it loses less than 10%. If you test it, you're going to find a number anywhere from 35 to 85%. So I would highly recommend testing it. If you're getting that many false inquiries or bad inquiries, there's lots of back-end software that your IT department can implement that's super cheap and easy to implement that can weed out the bad stuff. So, you know, I totally understand why IT people like it, and it makes their job a lot easier, but it's like double opt-in. It does not make it, doesn't make it work for the user. So things, you know, one of the things you can do if you have to use a CAPTCHA, which I totally do not recommend, but if you have to do it, do a server call before the user goes to the CAPTCHA, and then keep that information, put it in a separate bucket, and then use it appropriately. Mail it as a test to see how many of those names are actually bad. And if the amount of names is really bad, then you can always use that as a funnel. But if you only, you know, if you don't do the server call and you make the force them through the CAPTCHA, you're going to lose, you're definitely going to lose inquiries.
Okay, great. I hope that answers the question. I actually have a question. You talked a bit about email, obviously trigger emails, and then you also talked about video. I was wondering if you have any comments on how to handle video and emails. Is that something that there was a sort of a movement towards that a while ago, and it sort of died down? Do you have any feedback on that?
Yeah, so video and email works like gangbusters. The key is to figure out how to handle it internally, which is why people have moved away from a little bit, just because they're lazy. So because a third of the people get their emails on their handhelds, and video is really only meant for 4G which is not what users tend to have, video emails that go to handhelds tend to do poorly. And so and there are lots of other reasons, flash and all sorts of other stuff, but so people have just sort of canned the emails. So what you can do is see who's opening your email on the handheld and give them a version that has no video in it, and people who are opening it on a desktop site, give them a version that has video in it. And that's a really good strategy. It works very well, and, you know, it's a little bit more work, but it's very effective. And video and email, videos on e-commerce site should be no less than a minute, in my experience. The sweet spot is about 2. The over-the-top type video is about 4. So anywhere in the 2-ish, 1.5 to 2-ish range with lots of action directives and sort of blue screen pictures tends to work best. And those videos can also work in the email. You know, 5 years ago, people would say, well, you have to develop special videos for email. And that was true then, but it's definitely not necessarily the case now.
Okay. Great. We still have a couple of minutes for questions, so, you know, please send them in. I actually have another question, and that is, with, you know, the holidays are coming up. What's the one thing that our listeners should make sure that they have on their site before the holiday hits big time? Is there, you know, one thing that they should have, you know, versus every other thing that you talked about, if they can't do all of that?
Well, Mark should probably answer this too. In my experience, the big thing would be to collect the email address, and then you should, on a current email e-commerce site, you should collect 80 to 85% of the web addresses or email addresses. And if you can't get that, then you're not asking hard enough. Once you've asked for it, those boxes should disappear, but you should be massively aggressive about trying to collect the email addresses. And then my big recommendation for the fall is for people to mail more. So work the first view on your landing pages and be massively, massively in your face aggressive about it, but also email more, because email is going to make up a third of your e-commerce sales. And, you know, the bigger retailers are mailing, they're most likely between Thanksgiving and Christmas, right after the election, which no matter who wins, it's going to should be a good e-commerce season. You know, a lot of people are going to be doing two to four emails, sometimes six emails every day, 7 days a week. So for you to be in that mix, you're going to have to up your frequency. And, you know, the cool thing is with email, it's a numbers game. So if you see that you're getting a lot of opt-outs, you're getting a lot of bounces, you're getting your click rates going through the toilet, you can fix all that stuff. All of that stuff is easy to repair.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay, great. Well, that is all we have time for. So on behalf of Retail Online Integration and our sponsor, Steelhouse, and, of course, Amy Africa, I want to thank you for attending today's webinar. Be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. With that, I hope to see you at the next Retail Online Integration webinar.